Good evening. This is the KRFP Evening Report for Thursday, October 17th, 2013. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Idaho Health Insurance Exchange board member gets no-bid contract from the board right after he resigns to avoid appearance of conflict of interest. City government candidates are asked about local foods. Washington Attorney General files suit against pro-GMO group for non-disclosure, and Washington releases recreational cannabis rules. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Idaho Health Insurance Exchange Board Technology Chair Frank Chan resigned yesterday, the same day his Boise-based company applied Computing got a $375,000 no-bid contract to serve as the exchange's information technology consultant. Board members told the Associated Press Chan resigned to avoid the appearance of a conflict of interest. The 19-member board was appointed by Governor C.L. Butch Otter to set up and organize the health insurance exchange for the state of Idaho. The two candidates for Moscow mayor and one of the candidates running for Moscow City Council opted to answer a question about the promotion of local foods when asked at a Moscow Chamber of Commerce forum yesterday at the university in Best Western. Here's moderator and Avista regional manager Paul Kimmel reading the question, followed by mayoral candidates Bill Lambert and Nancy Cheney, and then one of the four city council candidates, Art Betke.
Bill, as a major retailer of food in this area, what do you offer as the prospects for more locally grown produce, as only 5% of what is consumed locally is grown locally? And then maybe I'll ask anybody else wants to respond to that.
Thank you. That's an interesting question, and it depends all where you mean locally, because as most of us know here, we don't grow much in Moscow. What we do grow and what comes to the, like our farmers market, for example, is out-of-town folks from the Othello Basin and Julietta and around. And so we call that local, and we have a local food in all of our stores up here. It's easy to get in if you're a qualified person that can support enough volume to make it happen. We look for it at Safeway all the time for folks that are locally growing nutritious food that we can sell in our store. Absolutely. And we are approached from time to time for that very thing. So when it comes to local foods or local anything else, as far as that goes, I think whatever we can do to buy locally is terrific. If by nature where we're at here, and this is a food question more than anything, we don't have local milk necessarily. We used to at one time, and we did when we had a dairy here right outside of town. We used a lot of that sort of thing. Now we don't necessarily have that available to us here in Moscow. Whenever we can, of course we do. But you know what? We've got a lot of other things. We need to be able to buy all kinds of things here local, and some things we can't buy local. It's just the nature of our business here in Moscow. So I'll leave it at that.
Good. Thank you, Bill. Anyone else?
Sure. Thank you. I'm a member of the Palouse Clearwater Food Coalition, and we have been working with the University of Idaho and Agricultural Extension, area growers, and with a lot of enthusiasm looking at the prospects for increasing local food production. We do, in fact, have a regional dairy. They're represented at our farmers market. But great opportunities ahead. Robin Olgren, the former Assistant Executive Director for Latah Economic Development Council, was just at an international conference in Philadelphia last week to speak about the local foods collaborative efforts here in Moscow. And she said she had a queue of 9 people lined up to ask her questions about how their communities could do similar things to what we're doing. Sodexo at the University of Idaho, Pat Clellan, the general manager there, is very interested in incorporating more local foods and regional foods in their service because the students at the University of Idaho, like those at Washington State University, are demanding it. They want 20% or more regionally produced foodstuffs. The Moscow School District recently secured a USDA grant for the Farm to School program, and we're looking at the possibilities. I just learned about it when Moscow was recognized as a healthy eating, active living community by the Blue Cross Foundation of Idaho. How can we have a preschool program, preschool to, or farm to preschool program? I've spoken with Secretary of the USDA, Tom Vilsack, and knee-to-knee with him, having conversations about Moscow Farmers Market as the state's longest continuously operating market in Idaho. And we're getting all kinds of grant funding, federal and state funding, to help support our endeavors in that area. So do we grow local food? Absolutely. Could we grow a lot more? Absolutely. We used to. Moscow used to produce more food, and I'm looking forward to the opportunity to do that again. It's good for business. It's good for our agricultural climate here on the Palouse.
Nancy. Art, you
want to? Yeah, I seized the microphone.
Yeah, I saw that.
So local foods is kind of an interesting question. As Bill pointed out, how local is local? Do we extend it 100 miles, 150 miles, 200? Are we going clear down to the California Central Valley? There's a lot of food that we cannot get here grown locally. Bananas, oranges, things like that, they have to be brought in from elsewhere. So how far do you extend that? Local foods should be grown and consumed to the extent possible, and typically that is all raw foods that you prepare in your own kitchen. However, there are lots and lots of products out there that we all use that have been processed, and this is a larger economic question, because here we are sitting in the middle of the great soft wheat growing area, but where do you think your frosted mini wheats come from? They come from Battle Creek, Michigan, and they're made out of eastern soft wheat, and that's a ridiculous concept that we are eating wheat from back east out here. But that's where the processing is, and nobody's establishing processing out here. And perhaps that's something we need to think about relative to our local foods movement, is let's put up some industries and do some of our own processing out here and do some of our own things. The southeast Moscow industrial area comes to mind. So these are things where we have to cooperate more broadly with our local growers, our local farmers, and try to establish that as a part of Moscow's broader economic perspective.
That was Moscow Planning and Zoning Commission Chair Art Betke, who is one of four candidates running for Moscow City Council. The four candidates for the three open seats on the Moscow City Council are Betke, Rebecca Rod, incumbent Walter Steed, and former council member John Weber. The candidates for mayor, who you heard from earlier in that clip, are incumbent Nancy Cheney and Bill Lambert. Voters will be allowed to vote for up to three of the city council candidates, and the top three vote-getters will serve four-year terms. The election is Tuesday, November 5th, and polls will be open from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. at the Latah County Fairgrounds on the east side of Moscow. Absentee ballots can be cast at the Latah County Courthouse Monday through Friday between 8 a.m. and 5 p.m. until Friday, November 1st. City Council members Sue Scott and Tim Brown are not running for re-election this year. Council members Wayne Krause, Tom Lamar, and Dan Karskallen have 2 years remaining in their terms. The entire Chamber of Commerce Forum will be broadcast here on KRFP this Sunday at noon. It runs about an hour and 15 minutes. The Washington Attorney General has filed suit against a food industry group working against the initiative to label genetically modified foods, alleging violations of state campaign finance laws. The Grocery Manufacturers Association, whose 350 members include Campbell's Soup, Dow Agro Sciences, Godiva Chocolate, Hewlett-Packard, McDonald's, Monsanto, and Starbucks, has given $7 million to organizers working to defeat Initiative 522. The suit alleges the association improperly shielded the identities of donors by setting up a special account for funds to oppose the initiative instead of creating a separate political committee as state law mandates. The special committee would have been required to identify donors. Earlier this month, Superior Court Judge Chris Wickham rejected a suit filed by the group Moms for Labeling, which sought to force disclosure of the identities of Grocery Manufacturers Association members contributing to the fund to defeat the initiative. The judge also imposed a $10,000 sanction on the group for bringing the lawsuit under terms of a state law that shelters citizens from preemptive or harassing lawsuits. Noel Lownley, the attorney who represented Moms for Labeling in the lawsuit, told the Olympian he had filed notice with the Federal Disclosure Commission and the Attorney General's office, and if the Attorney General had not acted by Friday, Moms for Labeling would have had standing to bring its legal challenge back to court. Following the filing of the state's lawsuit, the Grocery Manufacturers Association issued a statement saying it will, quote, review its actions in Washington State and relevant statutes and continue to cooperate with state authorities to fully resolve the issue. After a year of research, the Washington State Liquor Control Board has adopted a set of rules under which the state's legalization of recreational cannabis will operate. Allison Holcomb, the Seattle lawyer who drafted the initiative passed by voters last November, told the Associated Press it's not just other states that have been watching the process in Washington, but other countries such as Mexico, Uruguay, and Poland. The voter initiative legalized the possession of up to an ounce of cannabis for adults over 21 and gave the state 1 year to set up an administrative structure to license cannabis-related businesses. Licenses to commercially grow, process, or sell marijuana or products containing it will be available when the rules take effect in 1 month. In order to circumvent monopolies, one person can hold no more than 3 licenses. Out-of-state investors are also barred from putting money in Washington's new industry. Liquor Control Board Chair Sharon Foster said the group is proud of their work devising a set of rules that will make cannabis accessible enough to erode black market sales, but not so accessible as to be a public health threat. State officials are now waiting to see how much taxation revenue will flow into the Treasury. In response to a voter initiative that passed at the same time as the Washington one, Colorado approved its cannabis rules last month. The rules in both states are similar, although in Colorado the products are not taxed so highly, and both recreational and medical cannabis can be sold at the same store. Both states require tracking and background checks intended to keep current black market operators out of the industry. The design phase is complete for a 3-level, $49 million interdisciplinary laboratory facility at the University of Idaho, and if construction proceeds, it will be the first new building to be constructed on the UI campus in over a decade. University of Idaho Vice President of Research Jack McIver presented the plans for the Integrated Research Innovation Center to a group of students and faculty at the UI Commons yesterday. McIver said the laboratories would be dedicated to research teams working on specific projects, not individual departments or faculty members. Researchers from other universities or from the private sector might also use the labs in collaboration with the university. UI faculty would not give up their current laboratories when they use the Integrated Research Innovation Center lab space. The university has formed a 15-member building committee to refine the design of the labs. The labs will include standard core labs and flex labs that can be adapted for various purposes. The project awaits State Board of Education approval for a construction planning phase slated to begin in January 2014. Actual construction is scheduled to begin in September next year. Seattle-based architects NBBJ Architecture drew up the design plans. The state will provide $2.5 million of the $49 million cost of the building. The remainder of the funds come largely from private donors. The Idaho State Department of Education has received a $1.29 million grant for teen suicide prevention programs. Idaho ranks within the top 10 states for overall suicide rate and within the top 5 for teen suicide rates. Some mental health professionals believe that lack of services in rural areas is a big contributor. The State Department of Education intends to use the grant as seed money for the Idaho Lives Project, a partnership with suicide prevention groups. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather from the National Weather Service, it'll be clear tonight, low 31, sunny tomorrow, high 55, clear, low 33 Friday night, sunny and high near 60 both days, Saturday and Sunday, with partly cloudy skies Saturday night, low 34, and then into next week, continued mostly clear skies with patchy fog late at night and early in the morning, highs around 60 into the low 60s by Tuesday, and in the low to mid 30s for the lows. Currently, we have 53 degrees under fair skies at the Pullman Moscow Regional Airport. Thanks for tuning in to the KRFP Evening Report. Coming up next is Talk Nation Radio, followed by Flashpoints, the daily investigative news magazine from Pacifica Radio. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on Radio Free Moscow, be sure to become a member of Radio Free Moscow. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to Radio Free Moscow, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. That's Radio Free Moscow, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the Radio Free Moscow website to find out more ways to help Radio Free Moscow, including with our full power drive, which is almost completed. And we will be putting an antenna up on Paradise Ridge, but we'll need money for some of the ancillary loose ends, as well as for operating expenses as we continue on into the future. Nancy Casey assisted with tonight's newscast. I'm Lee Robartis. Have a pleasant evening. This is KRFP Moscow.